Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. Coming off of a holiday shortened week that experienced the first positive market performance in over a month, but with further risk of escalation in the U.S.-Iran war, the question that investors are going to ask at the start of a new week is, where do we go from here? So joining us here on this Monday morning to try and answer that very question, glad to welcome back Head of Asset Allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office, Jason Trejo. Jason, welcome back. Hope you enjoyed a nice holiday weekend, and thank you for spending some time with our listeners to begin another week.
Hey, good morning, Dan. Happy Monday. Yes, it's back after what is a shortened week, and I know our colleagues elsewhere and around the world, some of them are still off, so still not fully back globally this week.
Jason, at the start of this week, we can point to market stabilization last week, and that was good to see. What exactly happened, and more importantly, why did it happen?
Well, let's just take kind of a quick summary of market performance across different asset classes. We saw a bounce back in equities within the U.S. The S&P 500 rose 1.6% on the week, getting the short of the week, because Friday was off. It is now down 4.3% from its February 27th level right before the conflict began. This was led by kind of large cap growth, kind of a little bit more economically sensitive sectors, but also more secular growth, like semis were also up around 4%. If we look outside of the U.S., European equities, as an example, were up even more, with the kind of, Euro Stoxx index up 2.3%, German equities up 2.5%. So kind of a bounce back in equities kind of globally. This corresponded to a decline in the VIX volatility index, kind of the market fear gauge. It was lower 30 as the week began, and then sort of fell to around 25 by the end of the week. It was dropping around a little bit, but a decline there. In other markets, fixed income, we saw yields across the entire treasury curve go lower, about 12 basis points for the 2-year, 11 basis points for the 10-year. And then market pricing for, Fed expectations further went from pricing in hikes to, like, at some point even last week, again, pricing in cuts as the week went on. This led to a 7% or contributed to a 7% jump in gold last week. As rates have gone up, gold has sort of moved inversely. And now as rates go lower, you see gold sort of bouncing back. And on currencies, the dollar was up very slightly. So still consistent with kind of a risk-off flow, but not much as the other markets moved. And the other key thing, and this is kind of driving a little bit of this, is if we look at oil prices and not spot oil prices, which continue to go higher, because ultimately a lot of the oil markets, energy markets are spot markets, meaning they have to kind of clear right now, as opposed to equities are sort of discounting of future earnings. But if we look at where the kind of the forward curve is pricing for oil, specifically in the US, WTI, is 6 to 24 months out. It was down about $3 to $5 last week. So near-term stress, but their view is that ultimately this is going to lead to lower prices later on, at least relative to where we were the prior week. So still high, but the direction of travel is positive. So you sum it all up, it was a positive market story last week. Risk assets go higher, interest rates go lower, future oil prices go low overall. Why did this happen? Well, we saw when we talked last week, President Trump had further delayed until April 6th, some actions on attacking missiles on Iranian power facilities. He also made some comments early last week regarding, this will all be over, very soon. The job is almost done. By the middle of the week, when he gave his press conference on Thursday, the market reaction was a little less favorable. It seemed like not necessarily clear end in sight. Yet here we are Monday morning. There's some other signs that suggest efforts are being made to try and bring this conflict towards an end. There is a UN resolution to open the Strait of Hormuz. There are 40 different nations meeting with the same goal. There's Iran-Oman negotiations about the Strait of Hormuz access, and more apparent involvement of European and Chinese officials to try and all bring this to at least a ceasefire. And again, there's reports this morning that some allies, such as Turkey, Pakistan, are also pushing for a 45-day ceasefire that would ultimately lead to an end of the conflict. So it is still a very fluid situation, because we also saw the president, tweet out over the weekend that if Iran doesn't open the strait, he will launch attacks. So very fluid situation. But if I were to look at what's kind of going on overall and what the market reacted to last week, is it's sort of reducing a little bit the downside risks of oil spiking to, say, $150 a barrel and sort of staying there for a period of time. So you know, a little bit less downside risk means the markets can react sort of favorably, and that's what we saw last week.
Now, Jason, if we focus in on the macroeconomic environment, reflecting on last week, we did receive important March economic data, including the payrolls report on Friday. Markets in the U.S., of course, were closed. What's the takeaway from the latest jobs data?
Well, if we just look at the overall data, because we also got like the ISM Manufacturing Index and some other data, it's still showing an economy. Through the data we have, a lot of this will be surveyed based off on like, you know, mid-March, so not the most, you know, current. It's showing an economy that is, you know, relatively resilient. GDP tracking for Q1 is still, most estimates would be at, 2.5 to 3%, ignoring the Atlanta Fed, which is lower because it's been distorted by, you know, some trade data. So that's positive. Some of the surprise indices still suggesting the data was a little bit better than expected last week. And that culminated with the payrolls data that we did get on Friday. So the headline number, the payrolls, non-farm payrolls number, rose 178,000 in March, where the consensus forecast was 65,000. Now, there was definitely some payback in that headline number. Some of it was weather, because in February it was quite cold. During that time period in March, the weather was better, and that may have added upwards of 60,000 jobs. There was also a payback from strikes that lowered the payroll growth in February. Like, these are within the healthcare field. They could have taken away 30,000 in February, added 30,000 in March. So given there's a lot of volatility in the month-to-month numbers for payrolls, if we look at the three-month moving average of private sector payroll growth, it rebounded sharply. It was 15,000 through the February data. It's back up to 79,000 through the March data. And this is comfortably above what most estimates would say, like how many jobs do we need to be created in a month to maintain the unemployment rate at a stable level? Like that's the break-even job growth. So the latest data suggests we're at least at that level, if not above. All that matters, you know, because the Fed's research suggests that all we need to have sort of stable unemployment is, you know, upwards of maybe 10,000 new jobs per month. Other parts of the payroll data also encouraging, which is the unemployment rate. This is perhaps the most critical signal when you consider like the labor market supply story, and also for what the Fed will really kind of be gauged on or focused on as they make policy decisions. The unemployment rate fell 18 basis points to 4.26%, and the three-month average was more than about a tenth of a percent below its November high. So the unemployment rate kind of reinforces the message that the labor market is stabilizing. There were other details in the report a little bit less encouraging or more mixed. For example, the decline in the participation rate exaggerated the sort of the improvement of the unemployment rate. Average weekly hours worked edged a little bit lower, and wage growth decelerated. So it's not a great story for the labor market, but it is consistent with, if you kind of take an average over the past 4 or 5 months, that there does seem to be some stabilization after there was a clear trend of softening last year. So that's kind of the positive development. This week, the big focus will be on inflation. The data comes out on Thursday. That's the 9th. The headline number is going to go up a lot because it's going to incorporate the big surge in energy and oil prices. And gas at the pump on a national average is up about 35%. From roughly $3 to $4. As a result, the headline inflation number, the consensus forecast is it's going to be 1% on a month-over-month basis. For context, it was 30 basis points for February. So you'll see news stories on by the end of the week of, you know, this massive surge of inflation, which the market is already anticipating. But the question then will be, how much is this built into core measures of inflation and not just headline, which, you know, normally the Fed would kind of look through. So, you know, I think that's what the key thing is to look at next week or later this week, is the details of inflation, and is it starting to impact the core in some way? And, you know, time will tell on that. But otherwise, the number is going to look shocking, even if the details aren't so bad.
So, Jason, just taking these factors into account that you've covered with us, the state of the U.S. macroeconomic environment, you think about the fluid geopolitical landscape, taking all of this into account, what recommendations currently, Jason, do you have for investors?
Well, last week, I think it was a pretty good reminder that trading geopolitical risks and events is difficult because markets can move very quickly on relatively little news or significantly on actual substantive news. And just looking at the price of gold up 7% last week, equities, especially on Tuesday and Wednesday, up combined in the U.S. Over 4%. So you can get these significant moves very quickly, which also then is a reason why you want to stay invested and not again trying to trade this market too significantly. The recovery in equity markets outside of the U.S. or the bounce back I mentioned in Europe in your equities. These are going to remind you that you want to be diversified globally and not be sort of too concentrated, because other parts of the world have been hit even harder than the U.S. during this conflict. And likewise, if the situation sort of stabilizes in the near term, then the bounce back, especially say for EM or Asian equities, could be very sharp. We saw that last week, some mid-single digit type of returns for some of the Asian equity markets. Overall, our view on the U.S. economy, on equity markets, remains kind of constructive on a 6 to 9 month view, but acknowledge that, look, in the near term, it's very fluid, and we may have more downside versus upside in the very near term, but ultimately, we do believe that the situation will start to de-escalate by the end of the month. Oil will start to kind of increasing its flows through the straits by the end of the month, and look, that doesn't mean oil prices will come down quickly. They could stay elevated for a long period of time, but what it does mean from a market's perspective is that those downside risks start to recede quite a bit. And if that's the case, when investors start to look at the economic fundamentals, the earning fundamentals, you start to see more upside, which is why we have this, still this kind of constructive view on a, let's call it a 6 to 12 month view. If you look at other other asset classes, like in fixed income, rates dropped last week. We've had the view that the front end of the treasury curve, like the 2 year point roughly, was pricing in too much in terms of the Fed hikes. We still believe the Fed is going to cut this year twice, September and December. As that happens, yields go lower, especially the front end. So that's where, if you want to have exposure into interest rates, especially high-quality fixed income, going to the front end of the curve, the 2 to 5 year points are our desired area. The 10-year did decline 11 basis points, and it is kind of getting close to the midpoint of the range that we've had for a while, which is like around 4 to 4.5%. But the next couple of days, depending on what happens with the price of oil, the 10-year could easily shoot back up over to 4.5%. So a little bit cautious on taking a lot of interest rate risk exposure at this time, and maintaining a tilt towards kind of high quality fixed income in general. And then gold, we've been sort of advocated is still can be a good kind of diversifying portfolios. And while it was struggled earlier in this conflict last week, it's bouncing back, kind of suggests that, again, as rates go lower, it should benefit. And also as things stabilize, some of the technicals and flows and maybe sort of reducing exposure to gold that happened in the past few weeks as investors sort of monetized the significant gains they would have had, they'll return to being kind of buyers, which will provide gold, support to gold to move higher into your end as well. So, bottom line is a lot of the key views that we've had for the past few weeks, those are maintained, and last week's price actions have validated some of those views.
Well, Jason, very helpful touch base. Thank you for dropping by on this Monday morning to keep our listeners informed on CIO's thinking when it comes to the current geopolitical landscape, the macroeconomic environment, how it all translates to market action and guidance when it comes to positioning one's portfolio. So thank you again for joining us today, Jason, and look forward to picking back up with our conversation again next week.
You're welcome. Have a good week.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.